This is based on this paper I put out recently, and I also review a paper that I did with Masahito Yamazaki like 3 years ago that focused on the toric-labial quivers. So, but most of the talk is about the general quivers. So here's the plan. So I first give a definition of the quiver Yangyans for general quivers, and then I will explain the construction of this for the toric clavial quivers by defining them as the BPS algebras for the type 2A string on toric clavial 3. And after that, I'll explain how to generalize to arbitrary quivers. And then if I have time, I'll discuss some extensions and applications. So so this quiver Yangyan can be easily generalized to the, so this corresponds to the rational case in the this hierarchy. So it can be easily generalized to the trigonometric case, which corresponds to the quantum toroidal algebra and the Elippi case. And also, so most of the time I only study the vacuum representation, which corresponds to the non-commutative DT chamber. And I can explain how to study the other non-vacuum representations, which correspond to the other wall crossing chambers and also the open BPS. Or I can discuss this gauge beta correspondence and whether this not quiver correspondence. I mean, depends on what you guys want to hear. So. Okay, so first, that's the definition of the quiver Yangyan. So a quiver is just given by a bunch of vertices, which I label by A, and the arrows between them. Okay, so so here all goes from one, and so I always start from zero here. And then I define this notation as the set of arrow from A to B. So for example, so the simple case, for example, this Jordan quiver. This one has one arrow, and this one has three self arrows. And like this. So this is the quiver that come from the resolved conifold. This is coming from the C3. This is the M-conical quiver. All right, so.
And for Jordan quiver, there is no interpretation, geometrical interpretation, yes?
It's a building block for this not quiver correspondence.
Okay.
So there's a procedure to build all the symmetric quiver from this. actually I'm not organizing this well. So there's another, for example, if you take the C3 mod Z3, you take the C3 quiver, you get this one. So there's one major. There are two big classes of the quiver. So one is a symmetric quiver, meaning that for any A and B, any pairs of vertices, the number of arrows going from A to B is equal to the B to A. So the, this notation means that the number, the size of this set. So, or the chiral quiver, or the chiral, or the non-symmetric quiver, or chiral quiver. So this is a if there is some A and B inside Q naught, if the number of quiver going this way is different from the other way, so you see that this one and then the conical quiver are the chiral quiver. All the others are symmetric. So normally the symmetric quiver are much easier to consider because there's no wall crossing related. I mean, there's many formula that you can write down in a closed form. Oops. How do you? Okay, so the quiver. So one can also supplement this quiver with a potential, which sometimes is called superpotential. So this is it's a sum of some monomial of the arrows with some plus minus signs. For example, this one is supplemented by this okay. So this is A1, B1, so A1, 2. So you need a closed loop to be able to write down the superpotential. So this one doesn't have a superpotential. And this is just So now, let me write down the definition of the super Young-Yang. So there is, for each vertex, there is a triplet of generators. So they are given by So this is a Cartan. It's the raising operator, and this is lowering operator. So the, this is an infinite dimensional algebra. And so they are, the modes are organized by this spectral parameter. So expand this. This A labels the vertex, and this the J labels the mode. And the summation range of this E and F, they always start from zero. And for this one, this depends on whether the quiver is symmetric or not symmetric. So just I will write it here. So this is the generators. This one is the most important ingredient of this the algebra. It's some rational function for the quiver Yang case. So first, for each arrow, you assign this arrow some equivalent weight, and then you look at this this super potential earlier here. So for each monomial, for each term, you give rise to a constraint. So now, the definition of this bounding factor is the following. Should probably keep this. Can you still see this? See the definition? So now you plot this definition on these quivers. On this example, for example, so here there's only one vertex, so there's only one factors here. See, from 0 to 0, that's so let's assign this weight to be h. So this is just u minus h and u plus h. You just plug in this definition. And here, it's also just one function here. So there are three arrows. So it's, so let's assign them h1, h2, h3. And then from this superpotential, you see that this h1, 2, 3 has to satisfy the constraint that h1 plus h2 plus h3 equal to 0. Also, yeah, the others, maybe, where is the? Where's my conical quiver? So okay, for this guy, for this one here, there are two vertices. So so there's no self loops. So that means that the 0, 0, 1, 1 is just one. And so now let me write down the quadratic relation of this algebra. So all the precise are Cartan. And then the distressing operator and the lowering operator. So you see that the bounding factor, this phi, doesn't enter here. So this is universal for all quivers. And then the psi e. And there's some signs here. It's not totally important here. And this is psi e and psi f. So this is the same here. This is f. So it's the same structure, and the only difference is this is the inverse. And then the ee has the same structure as the psi e relation. Actually, there's no signs here, there might be sign here. And the FF has the same structure as psi F. So this is the quadratic relation. So if you want to convert this, so you see that this is the relation in terms of this generating function, the current. So if you want to convert it into the mode, so you just plug this one into this. So you can write this. So you can write this rational function as the some numerator and some denominator, and you move the denominator to the other side, and expand all this mode, and then take the singular terms. So that gives you the relation in terms of mode. Yeah. So the mode relation is you often need it when you want to compare to other algebras. But this is a good way to package the whole algebra. So any questions so far?
Is there a quiver for which this gives you like the usual Yangian for GLN?
For the usual Yangian of GLN? It might come from some reduction of the one of these quivers. Sorry, one of these Yangians. I have to see it. The same quiver, it can give you, basically this is a huge algebra. You can truncate, and you can also do the quotient. I suspect it's related to by maybe some truncation of the GL1. So for example, for this Jordan quiver, this is U plus H, U minus H. So suppose you want to look at this this equation. You want to translate into the mode. So it's just and then this give you, let's see. It's just this kind of computation. Should I see? So now you just run this machinery. You just apply this definition here. So this will give you the alpha and yang of GR1. And also, so this is a isomorphic to the universal enveloping algebra of W1 plus infinity. So you see that these two parameters, H1, H2, you can map this to the two parameters of the central charge and this coupling constant here. And also similarly, you can look at the double quiver of the alpha ADE thinking diagram. You can take the alpha ADE thinking diagram and then you write down the double quiver of that. And then you run through this and then you get this and then that quiver Yangnian is the alpha and Yangnian of this ADE type. And then, similar to this statement, this will be isomorphic to the universal enveloping algebra of the G extended W1 plus infinity. So this G matrix extended, so this G is H is the alpha ADE. Or also, you can also do this for the superly algebra, GLM slash N or D2N alpha.
Sorry, I didn't get, what does it mean? Is it delta to W1 plus infinity?
So this is some vertex operator algebra. It's you take the Virasoro algebra, and then you extend it by higher spin field.
Uh-huh.
So you have one field for each spin from 3 to infinity.
This I understand, yeah.
Also spin one. So what's your question then?
Yeah, so you say that you take any ADE type viewer, and from this you're constructing like
double quiver.
You construct quiver Yangnian.
Yes.
It's isomorphic to, what is delta double?
G, sorry, the G.
And what is GW1 plus infinity?
So this is W1 plus infinity. So the G means that before, for each spin, you have a scalar. So now for each spin, you have a matrix.
Ah, okay. So at each spin, you have also index related to...
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
So that's the quadratic relation and also the set relations. The higher order relations. So for the symmetric quiver, this is classified, but not for the chiral quiver. And also, you need to specify the coproduct. I think I'll discuss this later, after I explain this. So this is the first part. Okay. So so this algebra was first defined for the Torrey-Clabial three quivers, and let me explain the motivation for this for this definition. If you have a 4DN equal to 2 gauge theory, very often the BPS sector is given by some quiver and superpotential pair. So half BPS. So the claim is that the BPS algebra of this sector is given by is just this quiver union. So let me first reveal what is the BPS algebra. So this is the Harvey-Moore definition of the last century. So claims that if you look at this half BPS sector of this 4DN2 theory, there's an algebraic structure. So this algebra is the elements is given by the states inside the BPS superspace, and the product is given by some vaguely defined fusion. So roughly speaking, you take two BPS states, and then somehow you combine them, you get another BPS state. So now the most important question is, how do you define this fusion? So it's actually not that easy to define for arbitrary states. So our idea is to consider the case that consider the scenario when lambda 1 is some unit PPS state, and this lambda 2 is arbitrary, and then you consider let's write this as a box. So you consider the process of taking arbitrary PPS states and then combine it with a tiny one, and then get another BPS state that's also still inside the Hilbert space. So now this fusion process, we want to define an algebra that imitates this. So this is the racing operator. So we want to have this racing operator acting on this and then increase this by a tiny bit. So this is the racing operator, and then you also define this you construct this Cartan such that the BPS state is Cartan. And similarly, you also define this the F. Right, so this is the basic idea. So we want to define the algebra such that it acts on any BPS states and to give you another BPS state. And they also have to mimic this fusion process. So, should I write? In practice, so first, actually, before you start, you first want to define the arbitrary BPS states and also this this unit BPS state in terms of the equivalent superpotential data. And then you want to fix the action of these generators on arbitrary states and fix action on this. So this is defined in such a way that it's kind of a mimic this fusion process. So there's some conditions on it. So once you have this action, you try to write down all the possible relations. And then your algebra is just given by the free algebra generated by this, divided by all the relations. So now for the, so what I said here is true for any 4D NQ2 theory. So what's special about the Torrey-Clabial 3 is that for the Torrey-Clabial 3, it turns out that this state has some 3D crystal description. So then it's easy to it's easy to visualize all this process.
So is there a way internal for this n equal to four dimensional series, like internal, I mean, field theoretic method, to find these relations between generators?
Yeah. So basically, that's so for that you can check. Once you write down the relations, you can check using the field theoretical method.
Yeah, but I mean, what is a physical, is there a clear physical interpretation for these operators?
So basically the operator changed the, to explain that, I need to first explain the field theory for this. Okay. So maybe you ask later. So I look at the type 2A string on this, and then now I consider half EPS sector. So, so this is given by, I look at the sector where this, so this is given by D2, D0 on holomorphic two cycles on this Clabial tree. And I also add one D6 brain to compactify the moduli space. So the BPS states are given by this deep-in bound states. So now I look at the effective description of this sector. So this is just given by the world volume theory on the D0. So this guy is given by some include 2-4 quantum mechanics, quiver quantum mechanics. Should I erase? So inside this quiver quantum mechanics, for each vertex, that's some un gauge factor, and for each arrow, that corresponds to some chiral field that transform as a bifundamental with the two gauge factors here, and then this is Q0. And superpotential. So this is given by some monomial of all this guys. So now we want to find the solutions that satisfy the F term. So this the superpotential gives the F term constraint. And so we want to find a solution that's satisfied this F term and D term. And it also obey the condition that if you take two fields and you multiply them together, they're non-zero only if the the target of the first one is the same as the source of this one. I mean, basically, they can multiply only if the arrow can multiply. Only if that if there's a only if this is a I from A to B and this is a from I from B to C.
This is just matrix multiplication between like
matrix. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Basically, this is a gives a query representation. This gives the matrix part. This gives you the vertex part. So now we want to. So now counting the BPI states is just giving. It's like counting the this query representations, and then so for this you see that the. So we want to count stable representations of the quiver. So there's some theorem says that counting this representation is the same as counting the co-dimensional ideal of the Jacobian algebra. So this is defined as the path algebra of this Q and given divided by the F-term constraint. So the path algebra is just you take all the arrows in the queue, and then the multiplication is by the concatenation. Just multiply the multiplication is given by you link them together, link the arrows together, and you divide by these relations. So the state is given. So in the end, you translate into this counting of the ideals. So now. Now for the toric, so all this is more general than just a toric case. For the toric case, the special thing is that you can translate into this into the some 3D crystal. Like in the GR1 case, it's just it's a big crystal that it's like a big cube, like a stacking from a room. I mean infinite cube, but there's origin. What is the word? I mean octagon. Anyhow, so and then this ideal is just given by some finite the complement of this ideal is given by this some finite subcrystal near the origin. That's a statement. So maybe I think I'm running out of time. So maybe I just use the. Is this?
Sorry, in this figure picture, you had some like sizes N A and B for gauge groups.
Yes.
And where they are on the right side, I mean, in these crystals.
Where are they in the right side?
Yes, sizes of matrices.
So A, so the this crystal has colors.
Okay.
So the colors are labeled by the word vertices, from. So each vertex corresponds to a different color.
Yeah, but I mean you had ranks of gauge groups in quiver quantum mechanics.
Yes, so the E changed the rank.
Huh?
E changed the rank. E and F changed the rank.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Maybe I have some pictures. Maybe you'll see. So how do I turn this one?
Okay.
Yeah, so do you have any other questions?
So this N equals 4 quantum mechanics, it counts BPS, it's quantum mechanics with BPS states on Calabi-Yau threefold.
not just on Clavier 3, 4, any half PPI sector of the ink 2D ink to 4 gauge theory. I mean, not all of them, but I mean, there's some special cases that where you can't have a BPS, you don't have a quiver description, but when you have a quiver description of this BPS sector, you have this ink to 4 quiver quantum description. I mean, the special thing about this is that it's given by this 3D crystal. That's very easy to, that's also known before, this crystal melting picture. So there's no pointer, right?
There's the hockey stick.
Yeah, so yeah, this I just said earlier. So this you translate this toric data to the quiver toric data to the quiver data. For example, in this so what's special about this is that for this toric Clavier case, the superpotential has a property that each arrow appears exactly twice, each with one with plus sign, one with minus sign. So this property allows you to translate the Q and the W into a periodic quiver. So meaning that you can draw this quiver on a T2 or periodically on R2. And then so along each phase, the arrow has to go along the same way, so it's a loop. And then each phase corresponds to a term in this in the superpotential. And the orientations match with the plus minus sign. For example, the simplest case is this one has a two fundamental domains here. So now you just uplift this one, you get a 3D crystal here. So for example, this is the C3 quiver. So you have when you uplift this one, you get the plane partition configurations. So this is the one box, and then the three configuration with two boxes, and then you sum them up, you get the Mac-Mahon function, which is the BPS counting for partition function in this case. Right. So in this case, is the number of D0 is correspond to the number of boxes. So this is the next simplest case, example. It's the C2 mod Z2 times C. And Q1, Q2. Actually, it should be Q0 and Q1. Anyhow, so this is the you have blue and red colors. You have this.
This is resolved 24 case, yes?
No, this is C2 mod Z2 times C. The result 24, it doesn't have this, what is the word, hexagon lattice, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, the result 24 doesn't have this two self-loops. So, this is the geometry, the C2 mod Z2 cos C, and you go from here and you get this quiver and superpotential, and then you put them into a, translate this into a periodic quiver. So to lift it up, you find, in this talk, I always take the framing, the frame node to be to zero. So this framing corresponds to this one D6 brain that I added earlier. So I always consider the non-commutative DT chamber first. So that correspond to having this simplest framing. So here I just have an arrow from here to here. That just means that the first atom I want to add is color zero. It's blue here. So now, each path from the origin correspond to an atom. For example, this is the starting from origin to origin. It's the, what's wrong with this? So from origin to origin is this leading atom. And then this atom correspond to this path. And then similarly, this blue one correspond to this longer path. So now you see that there can be different paths that leading to the one item. So we need this path equivalence. So that's enforced by this superpotential. And then you see that once you go around, each time you have a closed loop, then you're going deeper and deeper into the crystal. For example, now all the atoms have a depth zero. They're all on the surface of the quiver. So now if I add this one that I add, is on top of this one, but it has a different depth. So the atom is specified by the projection and the depth. So now, so there's a rule that to add this atom, which says that if you want to add atom, always the precursor has to be already in the crystal. So this is maybe easier to think of this as you start with this big crystal, and then you just remove some from the, you take away some finite part from the origin. So then it's easy to see this rule so there is called the melting rule, because you can't remove the atom that's deeper in the crystal before you remove the atom that's on the surface. So for example, in this case, all the atom is, the precursor is already there. So precursor in some atom that has an arrow that points to the atom that you want to add. So for example, this one, this blue one, it has two precursors. One corresponds to this path and one corresponds to this path. And you see that only one is present. So that means that you can't add this blue one. So that means this configuration is not allowed. So now once you have both the precursor in, then you can add this the blue one. So this is allowed configuration. So this is the reason I want to explain this Tory case is that it's very easy to visualize. But all this has a generalization to the general case. So now to define this BPS algebra, we need to turn on this omega background. We need to assign this equivalent weight to all the atoms. So that's just given by assign the weight to each arrow, and then the atom is given by the sum of all the weights of the arrows on this path. So the path equivalence give rise to this loop constraint, and so the loop constraint you have to impose, and then that corresponds to the global symmetry, and you can also impose some constraint associated to the vertex that correspond to the gauge symmetry. So after you impose both this set, you have precisely two parameters that correspond to this epsilon 1 and epsilon 2. So this is your resolved conifold example. That's how it looks like, and this is the local P2 case. So now you can quickly explain how we arrive at this algebra. So remember that we want to first fix action. So this is the ansatz of this action. So you just that's a Cartan and then the raising operator and the lowering operator. So the point is to fix this psi and the big E big F, this new coefficients in such a way that they're non-zero only if the resulting states are also allowed crystal state. So by allowed meaning that if I start from this initial state, if I want to add one atom, this is the possible final state, and this is the possible the result of the lowering operator. So the point is that I want all this to be automatic. So this is the ansatz that's inspired by the result of the Alpha Yanim GR1 case. So the demand is that the coefficient is the proportion to this the residue. So we want the pole to be either the place where you can add an atom or your place where you can remove an atom. And also we don't want any redundant poles, because that we want this adding rule to satisfy automatically. So that gives the result that the ground state has one pole that corresponds to where you can add the first atom, the ground state for the vacuum chamber. And so this condition give us this the bounding factor I wrote down earlier. So, for example, for this case, from this definition, I get all these different bounding factors. And so now you can check just from lower order, see that there's no, it provides all the necessary poles and no redundant poles.
Sorry, can I ask about previous picture? How is the coloring of boxes going in this picture?
How is the
coloring? How do you choose colors of?
So the blue is zero and the red is one.
Yes, I understand, but I mean on the right picture.
This direction is one, x1, x2, x3, right?
Okay.
So we start from the first one is blue, you can see.
Uh-huh.
So from this direction, you see that's alternating. So this is the fundamental domain.
Uh-huh.
You see it's alternating. Blue, red, blue, red, blue, red.
So they just alternate like in horizontal plane?
Yes.
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 And in vertical, there
are. In vertical, doesn't change, you see from here.
So over red boxes, you have red boxes.
Yes.
And over blue boxes,
yes.
You have blue.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
I mean, you can also see that this is the C2 is only touching the first two directions.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, if it's N, then you're alternating along these two directions in the opposite order.
Uh-huh.
So it's a 0, 1, 2, 3, and then here is n minus 1. And So now you just run through this machinery. So starting from vacuum, right on the charge function, you see that there's one pole at 0. So that corresponds to where you can add the first box. And then there's only one pole, so you can't remove anything. That corresponds to the fact that if you apply the lowering operator, you get 0. And then also there's no pole for the red boxes, so nothing happens there. So now, starting from the first box, you see there are two poles that correspond. So this pole corresponds to the pole that you can remove this box and go back to the vacuum. And this box corresponds to the fact that you can add this another box on top. And then this, for the other one, you have two poles that correspond to these two places where you can add the red box. And then this the first non-trivial level. So this is the initial state. And you see for the blue one, you have two poles that correspond to two places you add the blue box. And then you see there are only two poles. That means you add these two, but if you want to add this one, you don't have the pole for this. So they corresponding precisely to this rule. So it's implementing this adding rule that we want. So if you want to add this, you need to add another blue red box that provides you this pole. Okay, so you can run this and convince yourself that this precisely satisfies the condition we want, that it's cyclic and it implement this adding rules. So now we have the action. You just apply twice and then inverse order, you see that it's true for all the states. Then you get the relation. It's a quadratic relation. You can also get higher order relations this way. And then you plug in the mode relations and you get the mode expansions, you get the relation in terms of mode. And there's a big difference between the case with the chi quiver and the symmetric quiver. I think I probably okay. Now I can stop this. So now this is for the how did I get this? So this is for the Torrey case. You see this the picture of this 3D crystal help us a lot. For the general case, you don't have this representation yet. Did I get this light on?
Sorry?
The light. The light for the blackboard? Yeah, thanks. now for general quiver, you don't have this crystal picture, so you just want to build this representation from the from the answers. So the so the answers I wrote down is on, was on the slides. So basically, E. So this is the important characterization of this, the eigenfunction of this the state for color A. So the procedure is that starting from the vacuum is just vacuum for the level one, you have one box with color zero, and then this level zero, level one. So from level D to level D plus one, you just write down this function, and then you see where the poles are. So the poles tells you. So in the process, you also have to impose this constraint that coming from the superpotential, and then the post tells you where you can have the where you can add the next item. Yeah. So and then so you can put things in the Mathematica and you just spit out the result. So yeah, I think I will stop now, and then I take questions, and I can also explain other stuff if you want to.
Sure. Let's thank the speaker.
Yes.
Is there any questions?
I have a question. So, for I have a more mathematical question. Is the stability condition well defined for any possible three-atom system?
Three-atom.
Yeah.
So the stability is defined with the stability is you define the chamber, right? So the chamber of course translate into which representation you are considering. So the stability condition for me is the input. So here's the logic.
So it's inherited.
Say again.
So it's inherited from stability condition of entire system, right?
For the entire system. Okay. So here's the logic. So for each system, I have one algebra, and different stability condition correspond to different representation. So they're the different representation of the same algebra. And the non-commutative chamber, that non-commutative chamber, that corresponds to vacuum chamber. So that's the one that's, in the Torr case, that's the one that correspond to this 3D crystal.
Oh, okay.
I mean, so the full crystal shape. So that's the one that's most easier to see the. Although you can get the algebra from any chamber, but it's easier to start from the vacuum chamber.
And now it's more clear. So you have the crystal, and the stability of crystal itself is connected to stability of the system.
Yeah, I don't have the concept of the stability of the so different the stability condition give me. I mean, I use this as input. So this one tells me what is the shape of the what is the space. For example, if I consider the say the conifold, then it's given by. The non-commutative chamber is given by this pyramid, right? The pyramid with four edges. So this is going to give me the vacuum representation of that Kerr-Jungian. So now, for if I move one step away from this, this is the one with like two zero atom at the top, right? Or M. So you can translate. So for this one, the frame quiver is this. So so you just write down this frame quiver, and then starting from frame quiver, just run this machinery, give you the other representations.
So you mentioned trigonometric and elliptic versions,
yes,
of this algebra. Do those also arise as BPS algebras of some?
Yes, so that's like one dimension higher or two dimension higher. So that's so for the trigonometric case is 2D, 2, 2 on the circle, or for the elliptic case is 3D, angle 2 on a torus.
This is the thing that's replacing like the quiver quantum mechanics.
Yes.
Okay.
So to go from the rational to trigonometric case, so remember this this binding factor, they're given by stuff like this. So they're all rational factors. So now you just replace each rational factor by a sinh function. So say, let's call this Z. This is rational factor, and this is by the theta function. So, yeah. What did I want to discuss? Yeah, so, for this case, for the GR1 case, this will give you this DMM, Dinha Yohala Miki algebra. That's the quantum to order of GR1. Or the Q deformed WO1 plus infinity. And so this is just for GR1 case, this is norm. Also, I think for GRN. And for this one, this is the just an elliptic version of this.
Yeah. Maybe you have explained this and I missed. So in this, like Afanasyan's and Dinkel-Haramiki algebras, they have two central parameters, which are epsilon 1 and epsilon 2. And in your algebras, your parameters are...
Is it called the central parameter, or just... It's not the central parameter. It's not sense.
Yeah, I mean...
They call... For example, for this case, they have Q1, Q2, Q3 satisfying this condition, right?
Yeah.
So the Q is just E to the epsilon H I. So to go from the trigonometric to the rational case, you just take epsilon, go to 0.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I understand. But my question was a bit different. So you have these parameters H, I, yes?
Yes.
And like in all of these quiver algebras, you have only two of these parameters independent, or is that...
No, for the toric labial, there are two independent. For the general case, there can be any.
And for toric, like for any toric, with four cycles?
Yes, there are only two.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So it's H1, H2 correspond to their Q1, Q2.
And for general quivers, they can be any?
Yes.
Okay.
Are there any more questions?
They have central terms. So when you turn on the central terms, then the crystal is not the representation. Because the precise... They don't have just preset, they're preset plus minus. They're not Katang when you have non-trivial central charge.
Mm-hmm. And like from the point of view of string theory, is this like a trigonometric case? It corresponds
like the M theory and F theory, yes.
F theory?
Yes.
Okay. And like this is like the same geometry times torus, times
yes.
Dimensional
yes.
Torus.
Yes.
Well, if there are no more questions, let's thank the speaker again.